Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Nora. Welcome to tonight's conference call, and it's the first one of the new year. From looking at everybody's accounts, looks like we had a really rewarding year, and hopefully 2020 will be the same. Tonight, we're going to talk about several interesting topics. The effects of the U.S. Iran confrontation on the U.S. stock market, investment themes for the next decade, and some interesting things about some of our recent stock buys and sells in the accounts. I just want to point out for some of you who have not watched the news this afternoon, but it looks like rockets were fired into either an air base or the green zone in Iraq. So I'm not sure exactly what that's going to mean for the stock market tomorrow morning, but I'm going to talk about how we have prepared for this kind of event. But first, let me talk about the U.S.-Iran confrontation. Iran has really been egging on the United States for some time through its proxies in Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, and Syria. In other words, these proxies do the dirty work for Iran and allow them to look like they've had no hand in any sort of violent action. However, the world knows different. The escalation of tensions when Commander Soleimani was killed in a drone attack kind of made things a lot different. However, the stock market, although initially rattled, didn't move much to the downside, especially after a huge run-up like it did in October through November. In this environment where we believe a retaliation by Iran is 60% probability, after today, 100% probability, I think it's wise that we remain with our target asset allocation of approximately 60% stocks, 5% gold, 30% bonds, and 5% cash. This applies for most of the accounts. However, those who have just fixed income will remain at 35% high dividend paying stocks and the balance in bonds. As a reminder to those who think stock markets go straight up and stay there, let me walk you through some history. In year 2000, the market significantly declined due to the withdrawal of liquidity by the U.S. Federal Reserve that caused the dot-com bubble to burst. The market also significantly declined in 2003 and bubbled along until 2007. Of course, I think almost everyone remembers the 2008 Great Financial Recession, and again in 2018 when the S&P 500 declined by 13% in December alone. So if we put 2008 into context, it means that the stock market has only increased this year by 17%, because it lost 13% in December of last year. This is one reason why we have bonds. In addition to collecting interest, bonds and gold act as a cushion when the markets slide. Although we have to give something up on the upside, we don't have to give a lot of it back on the downside. And over time, a balanced portfolio, in my opinion, is a better way to achieve risk-adjusted returns. Corporate earnings have been lukewarm, and the U.S.-Chinese trade spat has been going on for over 1.5 years. Thankfully, the U.S. and China have come to a trade truce, not a long-term arrangement, but a short one. It simply pushes any real trade resolutions down the road. But let me say with conviction that the autumn rally was largely due to the easing of trade tensions with China and the easy money supplied by the Federal Reserve. Without that two-punch hit, the market likely would have not gone up as far and as fast. Anytime easy money gets easier, and by that I mean the lowering of interest rates and a renewal of quantitative easing, which basically means printing money, the market will respond. If we take a walk down memory lane, we would find ourselves in a similar situation in 1999. Back then, the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates to put at bay the financial crisis that was occurring in emerging markets. In addition, the Federal Reserve injected a lot of cash into the banking system in case Y2K blew up all the ATMs and bank tellers. Nothing happened except that the Federal Reserve withdrew liquidity in the spring of 2000 to mop up the excess cash, and the dot-com bubble then burst. The stocks that are most overvalued get hit the worst, and this time around in 2000, it was the dot-com stocks. In 1974-73, it was the Nifty 50, and in 2021, I believe some of the momentum stocks like Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Microsoft will get hit hard. On the other hand, we believe the boring stuff we buy, and some of it includes technology, will get hit less. However, the bonds and golds should help cushion any downside. The difference between 1999 and 2020 is that there was no Iran to spoil the party back then. Now is different. As I said, in spring of 2019, the black swan or low probability event can raise havoc. And that would be a confrontation with Iran. I suspect the Iranians don't want a major war. After all, their economy can't sustain it. Without saying, I don't know what the White House will do next. A prolonged major, and I mean major, confrontation would likely put the economy into a recession, and that would mean a major market decline. For 2020, I believe this to be a low probability. Therefore, we're keeping our current asset allocations where they are until I see something that convinces me otherwise. After all, we are balanced and have downside protection in the form of bonds and gold. Every decade, it seems that there's a dominant theme and captures the imagination of investors. In my book, Human Action in the Securities Market, I wrote that markets move from pessimism to optimism, swinging back and forth, trying to find an equilibrium. The result being that speculators move an asset class like stock skyward, believing that good times will never end. Then the assets fall from the stratosphere back down to earth and crash. We have seen this in the past. If we take a look at chart one that Katie sent to you today, we can see that between 1960 and 1970, the major theme was the Nifty 50, followed by gold from 70 to 80, then the Japanese stock market from 80 to 90, the dot-com market from 90 to 2000, crude oil from 2000 to 2010, and now finally this decade, the FANG stocks. I can't predict which asset class will be the favored winner in the 2020 decade, but I do think I have a good idea where some of the next investment themes will come from. So according to BCA research, theme one, deglobalization. Odds are that countries will continue to look inward and concentrate on their domestic economies as the U.S. adopts an aggressive approach to trade. Global growth slows. China and European trade tensions increase. So the investment implication is that many of the companies in the S&P are export-oriented and that their profit margins may be squeezed as trade growth slows. In this type of environment, small caps should outperform large ones because they are more domestically focused. Value over growth stocks are due to heightened political tensions, and defense stocks are an arena we like, and some of the stocks that we have are Moog and General Dynamics, Hexcel, and Textron. Theme two, tech sector regulation. The tech sector will be regulated as the United States implements privacy laws similar to the one that Europe passed in 2018, and in California beginning in 2020. This will hit companies such as Apple, Google, and Facebook, who use private information to collect data analytics in order to sell ads. This will severely impact the above-mentioned companies and most likely affect Amazon and Netflix, too. In fact, any website that uses customer information will be affected, and many people will opt out, allowing social media and others to distribute, sell, or use private information. Theme three, software as a service, artificial intelligence, augmented reality, and autonomous driving, they're just not fads. The world is awash in software, and almost everything now depends on it. From your car to your TV to making your flight reservation on airlines, these companies enhance productivity and should prove to be recession-proof. Software is leading the world, and in this space, we like Palo Alto Networks and CyberArk software. Theme four, millennials are already the largest demographic group and will dominate spending. The millennials represent a huge shift in economic power, especially considering that they will most likely be the beneficiaries of baby boomer inheritances. The millennials differ from the baby boomers and Gen X in that they prefer social media, Snapchat and Instagram versus Facebook, online shopping and live on their smartphones. This is a global phenomenon. For example, when I was in Cartagena for the holidays, we stayed at the Hotel Caribe, which is an all-inclusive hotel at the beach. At breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the millennials were seated with their parents eating their meals. However, the millennials were not talking to one another, but looking at their smartphone. The same thing was going on at the beach and the airport, too. I've developed a millennial index that I plan on using in the investment accounts once a correction of a 10% to 15% magnitude occurs. And as the year begins and I start to do the performance reviews, I will share those millennial indexes with you, get your opinion, and to see if you would like us to include them. But if we look at chart two, the millennials, or chart 10, the millennials are the largest cohort. And we can see that between 1994 and 2014. Investment theme five, like it or not, believe it or not, that doesn't matter. However, climate change is important to the millennials. Therefore, ESG, environmental, social, governance, becomes mainstream because millennials are very conscious of it. Second, the Europeans have passed legislation towards advancing their own version of a Green Deal. Like it or not, I think it is only a matter of time that the United States follows suit. Third, institutions are being pressured by their beneficiaries to go green and are shunning stocks that are detrimental to the environment. In such a scenario, stocks that have a lack of demand will not increase in price. For example, we own Exxon and Total, and if it weren't for the dividends, we would have sold them long ago. However, they are paying dividend yields of 5% or more and trade in a tight range. The dividend yield is much better than what I can get on a bond, and I still have a chance for appreciation. In general, bonds don't appreciate. I'm digressing here, though, and one of the reasons why I am the opinion that oil stocks have not moved up while crude oil has is that many investors are shunning oil stocks, and this is a contrary indicator that may prove ESG is taking hold. The investment implication is that fossil fuels, gambling, alcohol, steel mills, mining companies, and tobacco stocks, among others, should be avoided. Of course, nothing is absolute, but I believe looking at these five investing themes deserve everyone's attention. Mobile is the fastest growing segment in the gaming industry, and we continue to believe that Activision is differentiated thanks to its ability, which is now ramping, to port existing IP over the mobile platform. Mobile growth and Activision's ability to exploit this is the key to our analysis because engagement is key and Activision's streamlined business is resulting in improved engagement trends. Activision's IP portfolio of strong content with proven reliable franchise with loyal followings is a strategic advantage. We had purchased Activision in December of last year for most of the accounts. Viacom is an old name that we've had for many years. We've been in and out of it, and I know it well because we've been in it since 1988, even before Viacom bought Paramount. And as far as I'm concerned, this is the cheapest I've ever seen the stock. It's trading at an unheard 8x earnings, and I think the merger of CBS and Viacom will make a stronger platform in which Viacom can sell content and advertising. Instead of trying to compete with all the HBOs and the Disneys, they've taken an armed dealer's approach by selling content to the highest bidder instead of being a Me Too streaming platform. For example, Viacom recently sold the rights to South Park for $750 million in a five-year contract. In addition to Paramount, Viacom has other valuable properties such as TV Land, Nickelodeon, Black Entertainment Television, Sci-Fi Channel, MTV, and CBS, which includes Showtime. So I really believe the stock is too cheap to ignore. One last point I want to mention is don't forget to look for Katie's emails on Fridays. That is an easy link to our weekly commentary on Coffee with Dr. Steve. Every week we talk about some stocks or what's going on in the market to keep all of you abreast. And I think it's a really kind of fun way of getting information to you. At least it's fun for me. Or you can go to our website at www.sfpria.com, and Arash has put it on the landing page there. So I invite you to join me every week, and any feedback that you can give us would be great. You can spread the word to your friends as well. Again, I want to thank you very much for your confidence in us, and I wish everyone a happy and safe year, and now we're ready to take questions.
I am going to now unmute the lines.
The conference has been unmuted.
Thank you, Steve, for that informative talk. If anyone has any questions for Stephen, you can ask them now, please.
Wow, I've done a great job. We don't have any questions. Awesome.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Happy New Year, Steve. This is Bill Evans. Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year, Bill.
It's such an overwhelming time. You don't even know where to begin to ask questions.
Yeah. Well, I think we got a good handle on things, and I'm not overly worried at this point.
Good.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good job, Steve.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Steve, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, this is Edith.
Hi, Edith.
Hi, good evening. So the gold went up $45 today.
45?
That's what I saw online. It's about 16.01.
45.
Would you consider 45. Investing more than 5%?
Hold on one, AD. We're going to check the price of gold.
Thank you.
Oh, it's at 1600 an ounce. Wow. No, I don't think we're going to go over 5%, especially at these prices. I think it's temporary. I think after this Iran thing, it's going to go back down.
Yeah, because it has been over 15 for quite a while.
No, it's about 2 weeks. About 15 over 2 weeks. You know, we use gold as a portfolio protector. So when the stocks go down, gold goes up. So that's chiefly why we use it.
Mm-hmm. Overall,
hey, Steve?
Yeah?
It's Roger.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah, you know something? I don't understand it. I got 700 ounces of silver, and silver is flat. It's supposed to be rare. It's supposed to be used in commercial industries. It's supposed to be, depleted. The U.S. stockpile is depleted. Why is silver still flat? It hasn't moved at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting because silver is poor man's gold, right?
Yeah, but everything I hear about it, it's supposed to be a limited supply. They're not making it anymore. It's used in industry. The U.S. stockpiles are depleted. Why is it so flat? Is it that controlled, manipulated or what? What's the deal?
Yeah, I don't really know. We were going to buy silver a couple months ago to add to our gold position, but I thought, it's like probably too much of an industrial metal, and is it going to go up to 50 bucks? And I said, nah, probably won't go over 20, so it wasn't worth the risk. But honestly, Raj, I don't know what's going on with silver. I looked at silver yesterday and this morning, and I was kind of shocked that it's only at 18 bucks.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, a friend says that the whole market is completely manipulated. And, and it's just not reflective of any type of market forces. It's just manipulated by, J.P. Morgan Chase and whoever.
Yeah, I really, really don't know. I have no idea. But like I said, when I was looking at silver the last couple of days, I was shocked. I thought it'd be in the 20s by now.
No, it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, if you figure it out, let me know because it's kind of depressing.
I will. I'll let you know.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Roger.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Bye bye.
Any other questions?
Hey, Steve. It's Paul Bisbano.
Mr. Paul, how are you?
Good. Happy New Year.
You too.
Congratulations on a very strong year that you've done for everyone.
Thank you. I drank plenty of beer in Cartagena to celebrate.
You deserve it.
Thank you.
I have a question. How do you feel about drug stocks and drug services for the coming year or two?
I feel good about them, but I'm not buying them until I see who wins the Democratic nomination. Because if Michael Bloomberg or Sleepy Joe get it, then I think it'd be okay. But if it's Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders gets it, then I think all the health-related stuff will take a hit if they win the election. But I think that just the nomination alone of Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren will knock the market down by at least 10%.
So you think?
I'm cautious.
So you think that might be a good entry point if they're knocked down 10-15%?
Well, I mean, the drug stock I like the best is Bristol-Myers Squibb. If it gets down around 60, 61. But I'm just watching to see how the Democrats plays out. I'm just a little concerned.
So you basically take a wait-and-see.
Yeah, because, if the Democrats can elect a moderate, I think we're fine. If the Democrats try to push a really lefty, I think they're going to, they're for price controls, they're for Medicare for all, one health care plan. Obviously that's not going to be good for health care stocks.
Oh, I have Merck, Pfizer, I have CVS Pharmacy. I thought Bristol was a little pricey, but you feel it's a fair price around 60?
Well, I love CVS, and we talked about it with coffee with Dr. Steve. And the reason I love CVS is, you go in the old store, the CVS store, and they fill your prescription, and you buy a couple bags of popcorn or razors or whatever. But, now what they're doing is they're putting clinics in CVS stores. And so, the clinics are manned by PAs or physician assistants or nurse practitioners, which is a level between a nurse and a doctor. And what I like about it is, you know, like my wife, she went to the CVS store because she didn't want to go to the doctor. And the nurse practitioner said, oh, you got bronchitis, I'm going to give you a prescription for Ceftin. So, you know, it saved her a trip. The insurance took it. She bought a bunch of popcorn and other junk there, and it was out. And that's going to drive so much traffic to CVS. I just think that merger with Aetna was just brilliant. You know, so I love CVS. I own Pfizer. I'm unhappy with Pfizer. Right now, it's just been dead in the water around 38, 39. I think they're doing some stupid things like selling off their generic health care, generic pharmaceutical stuff. So we'll wait and see. I'm not willing to sell it yet, but it's certainly not. I think what makes Bristol-Myers a attractive opportunity is the Celgene merger. I think that was just, you know, people criticized it. Stock was down in the low 50s at one point. And then people are realizing, holy shit, a smoke, that it was a good deal. So I like them. If it drops a little because of, you know, some political BS, then I'll buy it.
Because I have the Merck I have is Merck had a terrific year this year.
Oh, yeah, Merck is a great stock. I wouldn't sell that one.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing from you again, either on Friday or another newsletter.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you, Steve. Happy New Year to you and your family.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hugh.
You're always fascinating.
Would you tell Roger that I have about 20 pounds of silver quarter? I'd be glad to unload on silver.
Hey, if you remember right, Hugh, I divided that bag of silver quarters in four parts. But because I divided it, I got 30 pounds.
That's why I have my money with you.
You know, and Dad wouldn't let me divide the gold maple leaves. He made sure he divided those.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Good night, Hugh. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much for joining our conference call. I guess we can't call it coffee with Dr. Steve because we don't have any coffee, but we'll see everybody later. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.